Welcome to another day. We might have some stuff to say about scary movies or some shit like that. Doop a doop doop. And then I'll drop some N-bombs in, and that's our new Gem Hunt theme song. What do you think?
I love it.
Woo!
All right, thank you. I'm into it. Sing it every time at the beginning.
Yeah, but different a little bit every time.
Yeah.
Okay, I appreciate the feedback. Makes me feel good inside.
Good.
This is Gem Hunt. Every other week, you can join us in our pursuit of underseen, underrated horror films that we think are worth watching. Our only criteria is that the movies we review must have less than 5,000 votes on the Internet Movie Database Machine, supposedly. Eye roll.
Okay. Like you didn't enjoy that movie.
Yeah. I did. Where am I? My name is Cody, and I may look and sound like a normal living person, but I'm actually a creepy sex doll.
Oh my God. Well, I wrote this ahead of time, and I'm Beth, and I'm a former dominatrix doll that was turned into a human woman by a witch.
Well, you guys like prepared your statements.
Just
I feel
a little bit
of pressure.
Dang. They kind of.
Well, I'm Buggy. And I'm also here.
Nice.
I don't have an intro.
Are you a doll or a human?
I mean, I'm a human. I'm that cat, actually. I'm that cat who plays with that weird, like, Ouija board thing in that house. That's what I am.
Hell yeah. Okay, new stuff. We have all managed to go see Long Legs. And I just wanted to talk about that for a second before we get into tonight's movies. I don't want to give anything away, because I think we probably have listeners that maybe go see this in the theater. But I do want to talk about it because we all saw it. What do y'all think?
I liked it.
I felt kind of, this is spoiler free, but I think the ads, because I watched a lot of like the promos and like preview trailers for this movie. And I know, like, you guys intentionally strayed away from that to sort of just, like, watch it and not have any expectations. And I feel like that might have, like, hindered my, like, viewing experience. I enjoyed it, and I feel like it's one of those movies with a lot of Easter eggs. Like, in future watchings, it might be more, like, impactful. But I also felt like I just could not get over Nicolas Cage, and I just pictured Nicolas Cage the entire time when he was on screen, which was hard for me.
I appreciate that.
Thanks.
I think I enjoyed it thoroughly because Buggy had seen it first and she didn't say a word about it, but I could tell from her face that she didn't like it that much. So I went in with lowered expectations and then I had a fucking great time.
I'm glad you did. I want to clarify. I've enjoyed it quite a lot. And after I watched it on my TikTok For You page, pretty much every single video I got was in reference to that movie.
Nice.
And I enjoyed it. I had a good time. I just think that I expected a little bit more based off of the trailers. But at the same time, like, maybe I just didn't, like, get exactly what the like, goal was. So I feel like it's one of those movies I'm going to have to watch again, not in the theater. Because I also don't enjoy going to the theater, I have to be honest.
Weird.
It's just, I like to be able to meander when I watch movies, if I'm being honest.
That's fair enough. I enjoyed it. I thought there were multiple layers to the storyline that I thought were cool. There was the detective versus serial killer story. You had a supernatural element. There was some cult stuff. It was way more campy than I was expecting. I was expecting something much darker. Although there were dark moments, but then there were little bits and pieces that were quite funny as well. And then obviously Nick Cage did his thing as per usual.
Oh, yeah.
His makeup was hilarious.
Did you guys know what that makeup's based off of?
No.
Because he talked about this. That makeup he did for the movie is based off of his mother.
Aww.
Holy shit, that's
crazy. I know. Well, because not to get too much into it, but it seemed like from what he said, at least his mother had some like type of problems, and occasionally she would like put a bunch of lotion and stuff on her face, and that's kind of where the inspiration came from.
Whoa.
Like she put on a bunch of like Ponds, you know, like lotion.
Yeah,
I
like
guess
cold cream.
It like it inspired his makeup for the movie.
Whoa.
That's rad. No, I didn't know that. I haven't actually read much about it after we went to see it, so maybe I should do that. But
there's some interesting theories. Yeah,
gut reaction. I enjoyed it. And I thought it was fun. There's one last thing I'll say. There's a creepy doll in the movie, and that's all I'll say. I'll leave it at that. But you know what else has a creepy doll?
This movie.
Yes.
Tonight's movie. But before we get into that, we had a listener request, and this particular listener asked us to mention some of our favorite movies. And I thought, well, why not? And since we spend most of our time languishing in horror film obscurity, I thought maybe we could mention some of the more well-known horror movies that we enjoy. Like maybe two or three. And maybe we can do this on a somewhat regular basis, but make it thematic, like based on what have we seen recently, or what are we watching this week, or what was the diagnosis our doctor gave us? So who wants to start? Who wants to like just rattle off a couple movies, three horror movies?
I just saw favorite movies.
Horror movies?
I mean, I guess it doesn't have to be horror movies. It's just kind of for perspective and context of who we are as your hosts. But if you have something that's not a horror movie that you think fits, I'm open to it. There's no rules. Who wants to go first?
I can. So I guess like in terms of horror movies, a movie I've like really enjoyed recently that I rewatched was In Fabric. I really liked that movie. And when I first watched it, I wasn't expecting it to be as cool as it was. But I love the idea, and this is not a spoiler, of a murderous piece of clothing. Mm-hmm. I think that's very like interesting. And I also felt like the cinematography for that movie was really cool. And I just enjoyed that movie, its aesthetic, and also just the like concept behind it. I really liked that. But then the other two movies that I'm thinking of kind of fall under a more like uncanny realm. Like Blade Runner, the original one, that's been a movie I've been really into recently. Just because I remember I watched it when I was probably too young to watch it. I watched it when I was like 11 or 12. So I don't feel like I really grasped most of that movie. But what I appreciate about sci-fi and also this movie in particular is its ability to create like an uncanny environment that is uncomfortable, but also very like cool and aesthetically pleasing. And that movie to me is one of my favorite like aesthetic looking movies. I think it's got like the most beautiful set pieces, and also like it's just a really interesting, compelling story. And I think whether or not it's horror necessarily, it still like strikes the point of this idea of the future.
And it's scary. It is scary. The concept is scary.
Because it's a genre film. It counts. Like
yeah. Right? Like, yeah. It just, to me, like, it explores this sort of philosophical, existential, like, type of, you know, idea of what the future could be. And to me, that is scary. And then the other movie is not really scary, but it is, like, related to horror in a sense. And that's Belladonna of Sadness. It's this animated movie that has to do with a girl making a deal with the devil to get revenge. And to me, that's one of the most aesthetically pleasing movies I've seen in a long time. It's all watercolor.
Is it new or old?
It's old.
Okay.
But fair warning, it is like an erotic film. It is like supposed to be kind of like, you know, sexy. But I do like how it handles a lot of the complicated subjects within the movie, because it talks about a lot of, you know, kind of uncomfortable things.
Those are all great choices. I came up with a couple random ones, sort of random, I guess. One of them has a small connection to what we've been talking about. So the first one I picked, Event Horizon, 1997. We were talking about cult films last week, and I think Event Horizon is slowly building an actual cult following. And I know there's mixed responses to that film. I know at least two people that don't like it very much, but I think it's fun and I think it's still scary. The other one, Black Christmas, 1974. Man. It's becoming one of my favorite horror films of all time, I think. We watch it every Christmas season, and every time I watch it, I see something else that I like about it. It's still effective, it's still creepy. I love all the characters in the movies. It's just a good time. It's scary and it's fun. And I definitely recommend that one.
Yeah, those are both great. I didn't like Event Horizon that much till we saw it in the theater with an audience that was really into it. And it was really fun.
Yeah, I'm really glad that we did that.
It really, like, having a whole audience of people like yelling at the right times really made it I got it more.
I think also it is scary. Like, I agree with Cody on that note. There are parts of that movie that I do find genuinely unsettling. And I also kind of like the idea of a, of like
haunted in space.
Haunted. Yeah, I love a
it's
good like
basically just a haunted house movie, except yeah. it's a spaceship.
And that's kind of cool. I like that. I don't think I've seen a lot of movies that have like tried that concept in that way. Like Alien's a great example of like an abandoned ship and mm-hmm. things happening on that. But I think this was a pretty unique concept, and I enjoyed it the first time I watched it, and I've probably seen that movie like 3 times. I like it a lot.
Whoop, whoop. What you got?
Hereditary. I feel like ooh, every nice. Time I watch that movie, it actually scares me.
It's good.
I mean, I love Midsommar too. I think Ari Aster is doing some pretty cool shit. And then Suspiria, because I am kind of, when it comes to horror movies, especially aesthetics are kind of, I get caught up in outfits and lights and backdrops. And that movie is like the pinnacle for me of just having all those pieces perfect. Like mm-hmm. it's, the music, obviously, the Goblin soundtrack. Oh, so yeah, yeah, those are, and actually the new Suspiria was so good. And we only have watched that once, right? Or did
you? Yeah, we've
I've only
watched
seen
it
once.
Yeah.
It was long. Cool, actually.
It was really cool. It did a great job of like keeping that, the aesthetic.
I think
part.
There was like, in terms of music, I kind of missed that element,
right?
You know, and sort of towards the end, you know, I feel like it was really good through and through, but there was one scene at the end where I wish maybe they wouldn't have done sort of like a music montage. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I really liked that movie too.
Plus you get Mia Goth and Dakota Fanning.
You do. You get both of them.
Babes. But yeah. So yeah, if I think those would be the ones that I think about the most, or yeah. I've seen the most and I always enjoy.
I'm sorry. I just like, when you said Ari Aster, Bo is Afraid.
Yeah, but
Bo,
I don't think that's a horror movie.
Afraid.
And
it
I need
is
to watch
a horror
again.
Movie,
well,
I think, in a lot
I
of
think
ways.
There could be an argument made there.
I mean, it's scary.
Well, it's about like, I think for Bo, it's a horror movie, well, whatever yeah. he's going afraid. Through.
Need to watch that one again, too.
It's great. I love it.
Well, Suspiria is a good pick, and it's relevant because it's Italian, and it's styly, and there's funky music in it. And tonight's Beth's night. What are we watching tonight?
We watched the 1973 film Baba Yaga, which I am going to... I might say Baba Yaga because that's how you say it in Russian. And I hope I don't do that because it's stupid. I mean, it's not stupid. It's just I might go back and forth. But it's also known as Kiss Me, Kill Me. And you want to do the details?
I can do the details if you want. But first, I had a question. How did you select this film?
Oh, my friend Bob from Texas recommended it.
Shout out, Bob.
Yeah. And then I looked it up and it sounded. And also, so I'm like really... into like Russian history and lore and folktales and language. I took a couple years of Russian in college, but this movie has nothing to do with Baba Yaga in any way.
That
like
is true.
It the legend, yeah. We'll get into that a little bit later, but I was expecting Baba Yaga to be Baba Yaga and it was not. Yeah.
Yeah. That is correct. And we can talk about that. But here's a few details. Like you mentioned, released in 1973. It's an Italian-French co-production, but I would say mostly Italian. It's set in Milan. It was directed by Corrado Farina, who also wrote the film. But it is based on an erotic comic strip, or actually comic sort of graphic novel by Guido Crepa. And we'll talk about that later also. Before Baba Yaga, Farina had directed some short films, one feature-length film called They Have Changed Their Face, which apparently is an allegory on capitalism. Interesting, interesting, right?
Also, one of his short films was a documentary about the cartoonist who wrote the comics that this is based on.
Yeah, true, which is interesting. So there's that connection there. He didn't do a lot after Baba Yaga other than some additional shorts and a bit of TV work. This film is starring Carol Baker, who is an American actress. She was a Hollywood kind of superstar, I would say, and a sex symbol in the 60s and 70s. She went on to do Watcher in the Woods in 1980. That's one of Beth's faves.
One of my favorite, one of my like gateway to horror movies.
Yeah,
I love
should
that
movie.
Shit out of me.
It's a great movie.
Show it to your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, show them it
all. You really should.
Another interesting note, and we talked about this a little bit last week when we did Spider Baby, Carol Baker was in a film called The Greatest Story Ever Told in 1965.
What?
And that was the basis for Jack Hill's joke when he decided to title his film Spider Baby or The Maddest Story Ever Told. Or his original title, Cannibal Orgy or The Maddest Story Ever Told.
Love it.
So that's a random fact. Cool. I like making random connections between the movies we watch in each episode. I thought that was kind of fun. Isabella de Funes is a French actress, photographer, model, and singer, and she plays Valentina Rosselli. Sorry about that. Valentina was actually the main character in Guido Crepa's comics, and she was a great choice for that character, I think. We can talk about that a little bit more when we break down how the character or how the comic factors into this film. And then I want to note that George Eastman plays Arnaud, who is Valentina's kind of boyfriend slash lover, or at least the dude who wants to bang her real bad.
Boy,
yeah, he's chasing her.
Yeah. And so this guy is kind of an old school legend. He's done a ton of horror stuff from this era. And he also co-wrote and starred in a little film called Anthropophagus, aka the Grim Reaper, which is one of the notorious video nasties.
Have you guys
and
both seen it?
I've seen it. Yeah.
I've got to admit, I've never seen it.
It and is what you'd expect.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's kind of what I thought. It's been on my October list for year after year after year, and it keeps getting bumped. Maybe I'll keep it on this year. The art director and costume designer was Julia Maffei, an expert on the history of costumes from the Roman times and everything going forward, which I think was a good choice because this movie's pretty styly.
The clothes are really good. And then, yeah, they also are, they aren't just, they've kind of further the story or the identity of the characters, I feel like, a lot. They're really...
Hell yeah.
I do get hung up on clothes, but...
Yeah, everybody looks really cool in this movie. Mm-hmm. The music was composed by a composer named Piero Piero Umiliani. I think I got that. And over the career that he's had, he recorded 190 soundtracks, 40 library albums, and 35 TV title themes. And I think Baba Yaga has a pretty dang funky main theme. Kind of hits you in the face immediately.
Yeah, it was cool.
There's some other cool music that pops up throughout the film. There's actually a limited edition 7-inch single with a couple of the tunes from this movie floating out there.
Oh, cool.
That you could buy. I'm kind of interested in that. I've been checking out some of this guy's other work, and it's all quite rad, so I might be adding some records to my want list. And I'm just going to drop a quick few seconds of a jam here. It's not even from this movie. I just think it's cool. So, where can you watch this sumbitch? Amazon. If you have an Amazon account, you could stream it or you could rent it on there. It's on Apple TV right now. You can stream it on Tubi. You can watch it on Plex. Or you can rent one of the DVDs or the Blu-rays that are floating around. There are multiple versions, so just be aware of that. There's a dubbed version. There's the version in Italian with subtitles. We rented the one at Movie Madness, which was on DVD, and it was dubbed. I think a lot of the versions online are in Italian with subtitles, except for the one that Buggy watched.
That was on Tubi, and it was dubbed as well.
Okay. If you live in Seattle, you can rent this at Scarecrow, but not only can you rent this at Scarecrow, you can get the unedited version, so you get to see some extra nudity.
Ooh, full frontal.
No way.
Yeah, so Tom. Get it. Pick it up.
Get that bush.
All right, so what's this sumbitch about?
Okay, so our main character, Valentina, is like this. She's a hip young photographer coming home from a party, and she, where like a man is trying to like help her and shepherd her home. And she's like, no, I'm an independent woman. And she's on her way home from this party and she sees a German shepherd puppy in the road surrounded by candles, which is interesting. So she goes to try and he's tied up and she goes to untie the dog and almost gets hit by the car of an older woman. I'm saying older in imaginary quotation marks because
older than her.
Older than her. Old. Yeah, we'll say that. But she's an old witch.
Is the idea.
And she introduces herself as Baba Yaga.
This is a great titular line, by the way, with a dope piano drop.
Good night, my dear. And don't forget my name. My name is Baba Yaga.
So Baba Yaga is really into Valentina, like immediately.
Oh,
she wants to give her a ride home. She insists. She takes like an object from her, which I think is some kind of like stocking or garter.
No, it's like super sexy. Well, also she gets out of the car.
She gets out of the car.
And she goes, I'm distressed.
She's dressed like in black Victorian clothing. But I looked it up and Carol Baker was like basically the same age as me. But she's like a elderly.
In other movies that she's into,
I'm quite young.
She doesn't like it's definitely makeup to sort of make her look more like Richie for sure.
So after this encounter, Valentina starts having like erotic Nazi nightmares. And then Baba Yaga calls her and she ends up going to her apartment. You guys help me if I get things out of line because I'm kind of bad about this. And she goes to her apartment. Baba Yaga, like, fucks with her camera?
Yeah, she, like, rubs it and curses it.
And from that point forward, again, Valentina's a photographer. The camera is, like, a murder weapon. She takes pictures of things. They get injured or die. Baba Yaga also gives her a doll at some point. And
yeah, that's when she visits her house.
She visits her house, and she takes all these pictures of her house, of all the weird objects. It's like a very strange, creepy old mansion, which this is where we get into, like, this is nothing like Russian Baba Yaga. It is
totally
part of Baba Yaga's thing is she's a forest. She's a woman who lives in an old hag who lives in the forest that eats children and lives in a chicken foot hut.
But she also tells the most ridiculous, like, riddles, too, and that's a big part
and
of her thing.
And sometimes she helps a hero when they're lost in the forest. So this Baba Yaga has nothing in common with her except that they're old witches. And I actually looked up the word Baba, which means grandmother usually in Russian, can also just mean a silly old woman. So I think it's like a kind of like calling someone a bitch or something. It's like a feminine slur. Anyway, she curses the camera, gives Valentina this doll, which is dressed like a dominatrix. And at some point, the doll also comes to life and begins murdering people with a hat pin. Throughout the film, Valentina keeps having these different dreams. And the dreams are really cool. They're like comic book style, black and white, really neat dreams that are interspersed. And then sometimes you can't tell what's real and what's dream. So basically, it's sort of like that. It's a little fuzzy. And then at the end, Valentina understands that Baba Yaga is responsible for all this shit that's happening. And she goes to her house to confront her. Also, there is a bottomless pit in the living room of Baba Yaga's
and
house.
That's like
also,
the
there's
dream.
A fetish in S&M room.
There's a lot of stuff. It's sort of like the first movie we watched, Heart of Midnight. It's like this house where you go in a different room and it's like a totally different thing. There's, you know, so that's basically it. It's like Baba Yaga comes into Valentina's life and just
stirs
up shit. And then she figures out that that's why all of this is happening and she eventually needs to confront her. And the movie, one other thing is that this movie, I think, had a lot of kind of leftist Marxist political stuff in it. But because of the way it was cut, I saw that 20 minutes was cut. I mean, I think you can probably find that unedited. All the political stuff comes off kind of as like light chatter or asides, and you're kind of like, what's going on here? Because there's some protests.
Yeah, well, there's also like at the beginning when Valentina has her friend over, and that's right before Baba Yaga comes to her apartment and gives her her address. You know, they're talking and they're having like coffee, and her friend makes a comment about like the leftist protesters doing something, and Valentina's like, you're a fascist, and her friend says you're an idealist.
So yes, totally, the word fascist is thrown around, and there is some Nazi imagery. Mm-hmm. so. Yeah, I think that's basically what happens. It's very kind of dreamlike.
Yeah, it is. That's a good recap. I wanted to touch on some of that political stuff, because like you noted, I think a lot was cut. And the interesting thing about some of the political chit chat is that it does feel superficial. But then once you know that, it's like, oh, maybe there was more to this, because there were definitely ideas brought forward that seemed like they were going somewhere. Like there's a cool idea in the beginning where it's like, even Snoopy is subversive.
Well, Guido, you've proven something. You really have demonstrated in your strip that even funnies can be revolutionary.
Of course, even Snoopy in his own way is anti-establishment.
But then it goes nowhere. And then there's a lot of talk kind of between about like being a filmmaker or being an artist and being part of the revolution, but you never really get like a good in-depth conversation about that. It feels super light, kind of just on top of the storyline.
It feels, yeah, it's like half a conversation or something.
For sure. Okay, good recap. I want to talk about some of the things that struck me as important about this. So first of all, let's talk about a little bit about Guido Crepa's comics. Do you have anything to say about that? I know you read a bit about Guido Crepa.
Well, I read that, so Valentina was like the secondary character in his, I mean, it was, he was writing a superhero comic and she was the hero's girlfriend, but then she was such a like fleshed out character that she became the main character. And also this kind of comic was called Fumetti. And they're like erotic graphic novels, basically. There was some other, I forget, there was more to it, but Barbarella is also based on one, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Really? It's based off of one of those types of comics?
Yeah, not the same like comic artist,
but a different
one. It was like a category of Italian comic in the 60s, 70s. So I thought that was cool. That's, that's...
Totally. Yeah, so as time went on and as Valentina kind of became this main character of Crepa's comics, he kind of began introducing more hallucinatory and erotic imagery and erotic dream sequences into his work, including some themes of bisexuality and sadomachisms. Yeah, machisms.
We love that.
It's Sado, like mac and cheese.
Yeah, sado mac and cheese. And we see some of that in the film, right? And I think, like we mentioned earlier, Isabella de Funes was a great choice because you see the opening credits with some of the actual artwork from Crepa, and then you see Valentina almost immediately, and it's like, oh, that's a great choice. Just the way they made her look is like, that's the character from the comics.
The art looks really... Did you look at that? Yeah, the art looks really cool,
too. Well, in the intro, too, they have a lot of the art incorporated.
Yeah, it's totally. Really stylish.
There's a scene where Valentina is showing some of the actual comics to Arno, and they're porny as hell. And she's kind of like, "Yeah, you like that?
Liberate a woman."
But speaking of sexy stuff and nudity, this film has been slapped with the Euro trash or Euro sleaze tag.
Slap whipped with it.
Yeah, whipped with it. Are you familiar with that term, Euro sleaze?
No, I'm not.
I like it, though.
Yeah, so I want to nerd out for a minute here because I am a big fan of subgenres, which is why I like horror movies and it's why I like metal, because there's so many subgenres under that umbrella. Like, even subgenres have their own subgenres. So I think it's just a perfect playground for anyone who wants to nerd the fuck out. So I was reading this cool essay by a freelance writer named Anne Marie Schultz, who was actually writing about how YouTube has become a great archive for some of these old European genre films that are frequently referred to as Euro trash or Euro sleaze. And basically a lot of those had been lost until YouTube became a thing. And I think you could say that about a lot of movies, but that's a discussion for another day. So in the early days of film, there was sort of a stark difference between popular Hollywood film and European film, which was seen as more high art and maybe even pretentious, depending on your perspective. But in the 60s and 70s, you see this emergence of films that ultimately become known as Euro sleaze. And this label encompasses multiple genres, including giallo, Euro cop or Euro spy, Euro whore, and spaghetti westerns.
Euro whore.
Hey, guess what?
Euro whore.
The dog is about to bark.
The dog is about to bark.
We were just talking. Euro trash. Sorry. We were talking because the dog is really on one this evening. So we've had to pause. How I'd heard the term Euro trash. To me, I think of new money, loafers with no socks, bleached hair, gold.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd never heard it as a film thing. And maybe that's even, I don't even know why or what gave me my impression. Like, have you've heard Euro trash?
I mean, maybe, but not.
Maybe it's a 90s thing.
I'm not super aware. I can recognize it, I guess, from what you're talking
or
about.
Or you probably wait on them at work.
I mean, that is really likely.
Cologne,
Euro trash, same.
Yeah. No, you know what I mean, though. I do.
Are we being nationalistic or something?
Yeah.
Right
now? Yeah. Well, now is the time, right?
Yeah, I guess
now.
So.
Okay.
Some of the directors associated with this subgenre, Jean Rollin, Jesus Franco, Umberto Lenzi, and Joe D'Amato, Anthropophagus. Stylistically, these films are often a playful, low-tech appropriation of American exploitation films. And the author notes in this essay that Eurosleaze films rely on a theatrical, actor-centered, colorful, sensual, and erotically oriented approach to social and sexual interaction, all embedded in a soundtrack of pop, easy jazz, and lounge music.
So it sounds like maybe they're a little bit political sometimes.
Maybe,
social, if you say, or envelope pushing.
Yeah, I think so. But then there's also that little bit of this is kind of sleazy fun at the same time. And I think this film kind of does fit in that framework, but it's not the most sexy or gory or trashy film that I've seen in this subgenre. In fact, there's not really any gore in this movie at all, really.
No, there's barely really any. I mean, people get murdered, but it takes a while and they're not. Yeah.
I feel like a lot of the deaths are kind of off screen like something scary happens to them within Valentina's apartment. And then we hear off screen that they have passed or something has happened to them.
Yeah.
So one other note, a lot of big time American actors and actresses that were, starting to over-ripen in
so
Hollywood
if you're a
scene.
Woman and you're 35
right. If you're old as fuck,
yeah, they ended up going over to Europe and starring in these Eurosleaze films, and I think Carol Baker might be a good example, although she was still crushing it in America while she was doing this, I would say. So maybe not a perfect example, but it
she's
was a
still
thing that
alive
happened. Yeah,
she's 94 or something. Yeah,
hell yeah.
Anyway,
let's talk about the racist stuff and the Nazi imagery in this movie a little bit. So there are two scenes in particular that I wanted to note that came off as, at least to me, kind of racist. So there's a scene where Valentina's doing her photo shoot and she has a white woman and a black man as her models in that. And we're introduced to those characters. The black model is quite clearly a smart dude. He's mm-hmm. very educated.
Mm-hmm.
But then Valentina tells him to take off your shirt, leave your trousers on, and try to forget that you have an education and lived with civilized people. Try to look rough like the ancestors that used to eat missionaries, which I was like,
oh my God.
But then in the same scene, the white woman spots Annette, the sex doll
Annette's
she acquires
name.
From Baba Yaga,
mm-hmm.
and she starts to touch it, and she's like, oh, that's a nice doll. And the black model's like, no, don't touch it. There's just something weird about that doll. So it's kind of like that, the magical black guy kind of super special power stuff that you saw early on in film where it was there's a black character, even if it's not a villain, there's some supernatural,
right, like,
which is
giant,
a racist.
They have some like cosmic understanding of what's going on.
They're closer to nature. Or,
yeah, or they like just understand when something's off or something.
Yeah. 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 That is definitely a racist trope. Yeah. Buggy was talking about that.
I was asking, like, because in the context of this film, there's sort of a lot of conversation about like fascism and then also like Nazi propaganda. I was like, is this supposed to be ironic? Is this supposed to be intentionally kind of bad? Or is this, as you said, like a product of its time? Because also like the terminology she uses, she says like savage multiple times when like talking about how this black man's supposed to like interact or like, I guess, pose within this like shoot. And to me, I was like, is this supposed to be like ironic and more so like making a commentary on that type of thing? Or is this just something they thought was okay to add within this movie?
It's a good question.
I think the movie's smart, but it's not that smart. And I think it was something they thought was okay. But I don't know. I mean, maybe there's that, an like, interview out there where you could find that that was part of the whole greater picture of like...
Or like we're so like, you know, like left that we can make commentary on that because it's ironic. It's not actually like serious.
Yes,
you know, like that type of thing.
This country 20 years ago when we thought we...
We.
I don't think I ever felt that way, but that... You know, we were in a post-racial, so, you know, we're all on the same team, brother, so I can act this way. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it felt, as we were watching it together, and I know you had this reaction too, Buggy, we were like, oh, okay.
It just felt also, like, so pointed. Like, that's why I was so confused. I was like, is this supposed to be intentional?
Yeah,
like, is this supposed to be that way?
Maybe it was.
But even if that's the case, like, what kind of point is that to make? You know, because it's so casual. That's also, I think, the danger of it. Like, why is it such a casual thing that's just brought up? And also, why, like, does this man who's educated, who's gone to a college have to deal with like commentary about like who even knows like what if he was born in Milan or what where why does it have to go back to his roots his roots in quotation marks like what is that supposed to mean
it's sort of that like where are you from
Indiana
right. where
no
are
but
really
where are you from?
Yeah exactly
Indiana. Yeah like yeah
okay I mean I think we like pretty much got into it but there was another comment from in particular the man who, when Valentina mentions, like, you know, act savage and all this kind of like gross commentary, I feel like is the only way to describe it. He makes a comment about how, oh, you think, you know, you give your university too much credit. There's sort of like this commentary on this idea, like, oh, because Valentina went to university or because of where she's grown up, like, she thinks she's so superior. So that's also another reason I was kind of confused on if this was an intentional scene.
And I think what he's talking about is they're all part of the same educated community, and maybe that he runs into this shit there, too.
That's what I'm
thinking. Which is pretty... He introduced himself. He came in and said he was just at, like, a conference for the third world at the university.
Oh, right. There's
and
another
she kind of talks
about
shit
the
about
third
that.
World.
Like,
yeah,
because
she's like,
she
the
mentions,
third world, I hope they can solve something.
Well, yeah. She says specifically, like, the third world is on your shoulders, sort of, and, like, implying that, like, her, you know, like, photo shoot somehow is, like, so important that it could, like, impact other places.
Yeah, I actually wrote that down because it was so weird. Think you're cutting your throats with that third world jazz.
Well, that was one of the comments. She made a couple
like,
of comments
what?
About that.
Yeah, that was one that was notable to me.
After the photo shoot. Yeah, she says something sort of about how, like, he's going to save the third world, basically. It's just kind of a weird, like, it feels like either it's trying to make a point and it's not quite hitting the mark, or it's just like, again, a product of its time, where
or
it's like
a translation thing or an editing thing, like,
but I think, like, even if it were a translation issue, like, it's so like prevalent that it feels intentional,
right? No, I'm not like, you know, making I'm just saying there could be like so many components to why it feels so weird to us, you
maybe I don't know.
Also, that things people didn't used to think were racist.
The second scene, and this one is maybe a little bit of a stretch, but so Arnaud's doing his washing powder commercial, air quotes, And the whole setup is there's a good guy. He's a white guy. He's dressed completely in white. And he's chasing a villain who's a black man dressed completely in black. And it's sort of maybe a Euro cop, Euro spy spoof. And so he corners the villain and throws this white powder on him, and the black guy just evaporates. And I was
turns
just like,
into like a shadow on the ground.
Yeah, I was like, that's weird looking. That looks weird.
No, it is weird. I'm like, again, that's why I'm so confused. I'm like, we've got two scenes that are so, but again, maybe it's like hindsight is 20/20. Like when you're looking at something like that, it seems way more, you know, pointed and kind of nasty, where like maybe at the time it felt. But at the same time, I'm like, what kind of commercial is that? Like, regardless, it's still like weird.
But with like the Nazi symbolism and some of the dreams, which are a product of Baba Yaga, who is the bad guy who represents that. And with, I think that the filmmaker and the cartoonist maybe had some like anti-fascist, anti-racist sentiment. They were trying to like sausage into this film in a way that didn't like,
I don't know, that's kind of how I felt too, because it just felt so pointed where I was like, you can't be that like unaware to like add that in your film. But at the same time, I've seen some pretty like, you know, social unawareness like
film. Even in I don't know, it's interesting. There's a lot of interesting
Like what is the deal with all the Nazi stuff, and does this movie eroticize Nazis
a little bit?
In a sense,
but I mean, that's the bad guys.
Well, weird also I was kink. Wondering weird if kink. It relates to like Baba Yaga and her like origin. Like I was sort of wondering if like that connected to her, like maybe she was like a person within that time.
Yeah,
was
what also the hell is her origin? I mean, speaking of like, yeah, because she's supposed to be old, so yeah. Maybe she's like a leftover fascist.
That's what I thought.
Yeah,
is kind of like that idea of like she probably was there during that time, if it's such like a prevalent part of Valentina's dreams, and like
she was like Mussolini's broad or
that's
something.
That's what I'm thinking. It feels so like intentional, where I'm like, does that relate to her history?
And maybe you know, the 70s is only less than 30 years away from the war. So those people were still around, and it was probably, you know, it's probably like, oh, right. Grandma down the street.
And
actually,
she's got that
was
nice
like,
house.
That is
you
a
know?
Good point.
Liked Nazi dick or something.
Where'd she get her
dick.
Money from, you know?
What yeah.
the hell?
Yeah.
Let's talk about feminism and some of the LGBTQ themes in this, because I read some reviews where the reviewers took shots at this movie for being homophobic and portraying sort of a bullshit feminism where, you know, Valentina's an independent woman with her own career, but this movie you kind of have this big strong man that comes up to save her from the dirty lesbian witch. And some people had problems with that as a feminist idea, but sort of regardless of how you feel about the feminist angle, I think the S&M loving lesbian witch is a bit problematic. Maybe even more. I think maybe the anti-feminist or sloppy feminist is a bit of a reach, but could be a bit homophobic.
Like a lesbian predator.
Well, yeah, I think it also kind of goes into the trope of like queer characters always being villainous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where
Ursula.
Yeah, which great, but or like even, you know, like yeah, a lot of Disney films I feel like do kind of have that element, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think more so the harm in it is that there's not a lot of accurate portrayals of that type of, you know, sexuality specifically during that time, which makes it kind of more
just like
harsh,
the regular person down
not,
the street.
So, yeah.
Yeah, if it's like someone who's trying to like catch you and use you, and
because I don't think there's anything wrong with portraying like anyone is a villain, but if that's the only like reference you have for like a queer character, that I think is problematic, especially during this time. And also you could maybe argue it's like hypersexualizing, you know, being lesbian or something like that, which I feel like is kind of prominent in erotic films, is sort of like
fetishization.
Yeah,
I was like, almost there.
Yeah,
not quite.
Almost. But you know what we're trying to say of lesbianism in general, and like sapphic love.
Well, I have this one quote from a review I read that said, Baba Yaga manages to weaponize the straight male visual pleasure of actualizing their faulty version of lesbianism and bases the narrative around male sexual fantasies.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure, One other thing, though, is I feel like, okay, on the fake feminist front, Valentina, the whole movie, when it comes to that dude, is kind of like, I'm fine, I can do it myself. But then at the end, he ends up helping her, but it is more almost by chance. Like, I don't feel like she's like a damsel in distress that's like calling for a man to help her. He's like basically like, you know.
She's her boy toy.
Tailing her the whole movie trying to.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, yes.
Maybe the ending has sort of a dark message, but I do agree that like Valentina's her own person throughout the film with her like own decisions for
sure. Yeah, so I think the feminism critiques fall a little flatter than the like, yeah, the representation of queer or lesbian characters.
Yeah, that's fair. And then I was just wondering how this maybe relates back to the comic, which I have not actually seen. I've never read an entire Crepaw erotic novel. And so I don't know. Maybe it's just harder to bring an erotic comic to life through film than one may think. You know, maybe this is as close as you can get. And obviously things got cut, but.
That makes sense, though. Also, one about the getting cut. Another thing I read, I didn't talk about the negative yet, right?
Yep.
Where am I? What's happening? So 20 minutes was cut out of like a working version of it that you can get that 20 minutes back. But initially, when the movie was done, the director went on vacation and he came back and they had cut 30 minutes from the negative. And he obviously was super mad and threatened to quit the project entirely because like it's gone. So that might affect... the overall flow of it, what actually was done. But yeah, I think that's pretty crazy. And yeah, I can imagine trying, especially in this time. I mean, it's practical effects, obviously. Trying to, and just the feel of a comic, getting the feel of a comic into a film, it'd be hard.
Yeah. I think aesthetically, at least, it really, like, has that vibe, and I appreciate that. But maybe you're right. Like, maybe it's harder to translate some of those ideas. Also, like, I don't really know how, like, much censorship was, like,
there
a
was
problem.
A lot. No, part of the 20 minutes was also that. It, and I think the half, all of it, like, yeah, like, you can draw a lot more erotic things than you can make actors act out and get away with it. Mm-hmm. And also, I think film is a bigger... medium where you're a little bit more closely watched what you're putting out. Like you can put out whatever, whoever jerking whoever off in a graphic novel and fly
what?
Under the radar.
You can put that out?
Yeah.
You can.
And
they
you
have
can find it at your
years.
Local books. Actually.
Well, yeah. Because it's holy also like shit. An independent release as opposed to like, at least with like
studio.
Europe, I feel like also they have like a lot of like, you know, they give people money and also like opportunities to make films. So it could be maybe in that way more like hindering for when you're trying to like...
Yeah,
actualize
I wrote that
like
down
that.
Too. It's like there was actually, you know, there's, a, it's just like sort of the, here in America, the, you know, all the struggles John Waters had with the Baltimore Film Council or whatever, Maryland, whatever. There's an actual organization that was the like censorship board in Italy that they butted heads with and had to cut stuff for that reason too.
That's why Carol Baker couldn't get full ass naked.
Oh, right. She's fully naked in it.
That's why I didn't get to see that. Mm-hmm. God,
but
damn
you can,
you.
That you can actually watch.
Where?
Yeah. There's a special. Well, there's one Blu-ray special that has that as an extra. And apparently there's one release. This is the one I was talking about that's available at Scarecrow that has that footage reinserted and kind of remastered in the context of the film. Interesting. I don't know if it actually has any impact on the storyline. I think it's just the stuff that was like, this is too naked for this movie. I think a lot of the like context got cut and lost, but
we all know those how sometimes director's cuts can go.
True.
not always. They're not always God like they
true.
Think they
that's
are.
That's very true. One last question before we get into what we liked and didn't like. Is this a horror movie? What do you think?
Buggy, you think it's a horror movie?
I don't know. I think it's kind of complicated, but I think it has elements of horror. I think like with horror too, it's kind of subjective and that's what's cool because I think there are many movies that might not like qualify for that genre and still have that sort of ability to make you uncomfortable, Whereas this movie doesn't make me uncomfortable, but it definitely has horror elements of it where, like, I don't think it qualifies as like a thriller or something like that. There's also like a supernatural element of it, which I would consider horror.
Yeah.
I think it does kind of lean thriller.
You think so?
Well, I mean, I think in the end I'd call it a horror movie because you're right. The supernatural, murders, music, but kind of feels maybe like an erotic thriller. I don't know.
I think it leans horror just because there's enough tropes in there. We have a haunted doll that becomes a real person that kills people. Mm-hmm. We have a creepy old house with a bottomless pit in it and a monkey, and someone lets the monkey loose.
People think I got the power because I got the monkeys. Nope. I got the power because I'll let the monkeys loose.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the monkey.
There's a witch. There's supernatural happenings. There's a cursed camera. I think there's a lot of stuff. And even though it takes a bit of time to get to it, it's all horror tropes in it. All is kind of just hung like Christmas ornaments throughout, which of a storyline that's kind of an erotic thriller, but it's got all these horror tropes hung along it. So
I will say it is like when you look up the film, it is described as an erotic thriller as opposed to a horror film.
I kind of, when I was looking at it, I saw it tagged as horror on IMDb. So I was like, okay.
Yeah. No, but on the actual like Google page, if you look it up, it's under the genre erotic thriller.
Interesting.
I feel like it would be a good companion with our first movie that we watched, A Heart of Midnight. Not just because of the look and the feel and the storyline. Some of the music, there's some piano in this movie that really reminded me of some of the piano in A Heart of Midnight. Mm. One last thing that I wanted to note before we get on to this next section. Apparently the actress who plays the living dominatrix doll, when they asked her agent, will she do nude scenes? The agent said, try and stop her.
Oh, I love it.
Awesome. I love that.
That reminds
what an agent, though.
Yeah, yes. She's a slut.
Try and stop her. You can't.
What's her face? Carol Baker, something I read said that the director said that she was the one who wanted to do the full frontal.
Oh.
That it was her. She.
It was her agent who said no.
No, no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
never mind.
It got cut completely.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
The sensors cut that.
Okay.
So, it was her insistence or something.
But you can still see it. Go find it.
I'm going to look for it.
If you really need to see one more bush in your life.
I really need to see it.
At least one. I mean, yes.
Okay. Let's talk about what we did or did not like about this thing. Who wants to?
I don't know. I think we kind of got into some of our sort of criticisms of it. And also I thought the aesthetic of the movie, as we talked about, was really great. I love movies like that. I love also the sounds of old movies too, like people walk in on streets and stuff. I don't know, it just satisfies me.
Little cobble
sound. Actually, I really enjoy that. Okay.
Clip clop.
I love that sound quality. That's kind of shitty. And I liked the aesthetic of the movie. The women were obviously gorgeous.
Oh, my God. Beautiful, stylish clothing.
And, the symbolism. We see, a bunch of eyes and, all that stuff. I appreciated the symbolism. I thought the aesthetic of the movie was cool. Also, if you hear any purring, it's my cat, Hammy. She says hi. But, yeah. Overall, I like the aesthetic of this movie. I like the cinematography. I do think that they're... might be some commentary to be made specifically about sapphic relationships and how this could be maybe harmful representation in a sense, just considering the time and that there's not a lot of other movies that really handle that type of love in a positive way. And I can't tell exactly if some of the blatantly racist things are particularly commentary on, fascism or maybe a lot of things going on, maybe even in Milan. I don't know. But I enjoyed it. I think there maybe are some problematic themes in the movie. But I still appreciated it in general.
Aesthetics 100. This movie came out 4 years before Suspiria. I mean, it's obviously not the same. It's not the...
Sorry, that's Hammy, by the way, if you hear
her. Yeah, the cat's into
the
picture. She hollers. What's the word? Why can't I remember the fucking camera? the color camera that Argento used, the last one to make Suspiria. It didn't have like that level of, what's it called? Technicolor.
Oh, okay.
So it didn't have that huge stylistic impact, but it was very attentive to detail in sets, wardrobe, makeup. I mean, all of that was amazing. The whole thing all the way through was like a music video I could watch just style-wise. The narrative was not super clear. Again, there was like the merging of dream and reality that was intentional, but also sometimes hard to follow, which again could be, editing could be a factor. I didn't really get bored though. I don't know. I didn't feel bored. I enjoyed it all the way through. There was funny stuff, interesting stuff. Yes, there was problematic stuff that definitely we all took note of as it was happening, which sometimes that's a good, it's good to like see that and think about it. Overall, I would say I liked more than I disliked.
Yeah. Obviously, this movie's stylish as hell, which I loved. It's great to look at. The first time through, I was a bit confused about the storyline as well, but it was engaging enough that I was locked into the story, even if I wasn't completely following it. And at the same time, I was just kind of riding the wave of the look and the feel of the film. And I wanted to note the sex scenes in this are really cool because it's not just a straight sex scene with the actors. There are these black and white still images that flash on screen, and then they are sort of structured to look like the comic strip, which is a really nice touch, and it really kind of classed up what could have otherwise been just like a trashy, gratuitous sex scene in the middle of a movie. I really like some of the cool horror concepts, like the cursed camera and the doll that becomes a real person and kills people. The bottomless hole, obviously, is a cool concept. Really interesting. Like the whole haunted house thing, it kind of becomes a haunted house film for a brief moment at some point. The music's cool. The performances were solid. Obviously, it's a little clunky here and there. It's a little confusing, which is sort of what you would expect from an Italian horror film of this era. I know a lot of reviews kind of hit on this when I was researching this, talking about, this is all style over substance. It looks cool, but there really isn't anything to the story, which I think I would disagree with. I think the story is actually pretty solid. Okay, let's talk about a couple things. I wanted to talk about something before we get into our obscurity rating. I found a new thing.
Oh.
And I don't want to make it a big deal or like part of our obscurity rating thing, but the site that I look at to find out where you can watch this, which is called Just Watch, they have a algorithm that is their streaming popularity ranking, which I think is really interesting.
Ooh.
And as of today, the streaming popularity chart has this ranked number 6,686. I don't know what that is out of, but apparently this movie has moved up the charts 2,746 places since yesterday.
So what are we just like write like zeitgeist writers, like surfing the—
We might be.
What would do that? Sensory break.
Yeah, we need a sensory break. We're having a nervous breakdown. Everyone's having a nervous breakdown.
I'm having a nervous breakdown.
The dog's just tilting his head like crazy. You're not recording.
I'm gonna keep this rolling as we're having a nervous breakdown live on air.
The house has melted down. This is what happens when you buy a zoo.
Yeah. Everybody on this podcast
moving my head
needs to have animals.
Face. No, it's like there's like hair on my nose.
Boy, oh boy. Okay, so let's do our classic obscurity rating with our super scientific methodology here. IMDb wow, hello. Welcome.
Hello.
This has been a long one.
I know. I feel like, yeah, it has been. Isn't it, though?
Isn't it?
Oh my God.
IMDb votes 2,300. IMDb critics, 68. Rotten Tomato reviews, 1.
Whoa.
Availability, this is streaming on 4 platforms, plus the Blu-rays and DVDs out there. All in all, 5 out of 10. Not bad. Kind of right in the middle. I think...
Albert!
I think that this movie is similar to Spider Baby in that it is not something the wider audience has seen, but critics have checked out, because Italian films, Italian horror films, Eurosleaze is something that people are interested in, at least nerds.
I have the hiccups.
I see.
I'm trying to scare her silently.
Okay. Well, we did that. You're hiccuping while you're hiccuping.
I'm not hiccuping. You are.
You are. Let's get prepared to do the thing that we do
on this
show, where we vote on whether this goddamn movie is a fucking gem or not. Count of 3. Thumbs up, thumbs down. 3, 2, 1.
Oh.
Wow.
Shoot.
That's interesting. Okay. For the record, we have 2 thumbs up, 1 thumbs down. I'm a thumbs up.
I have a thumbs up.
I'm a thumbs down.
Interesting.
Do you have a short statement?
Well, okay. I want to clarify too. Like, I thought this movie was good, but I guess sort of what I'm basing off my thumbs up versus thumbs down is if I'm going to watch this movie again, or if I'd want to watch this movie again,
or recommend it.
And I think I'd honestly recommend it. Like, I don't want to be like it's a big pile of shit. I want to do a middle, but I was like that might break our whole thing. Because I enjoyed my time watching this movie. I just felt like it was a movie where I liked it, but I'm not going to watch it again. But I still enjoyed it quite a bit.
I think that's totally valid.
Yeah.
That's totally valid. Yeah.
I voted down on the fucking Olympics one. And that's why for me too, I was like, eh.
Yeah. I voted down on that too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Did I vote down on that?
What was the one? We had 1, 2 ups, 2 downs. What was the one we had?
Well, there aren't 4 of us.
You mean 2 ups, 1 down.
Yeah.
That was, I actually don't know what that was.
We've been doing this so long.
It was the forest one.
Oh yeah, right.
We downvoted it.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that is valid. I think I would recommend it. I thought it was cozy. I thought it was pretty.
Yeah, pretty good. Before we get out of here, I want to do a quick thing. I want to put in a plug for all the independent and nonprofit theaters and movie stores out there.
Woo!
Go out and support those places. If you're a film fan or if you're just a fan of keeping art and culture alive, Scarecrow is going through some tough times right now. So go make a donation or go rent some movies from them. Cinemagic here in Portland, they've had some challenges recently, but it's an awesome theater and their programming just keeps getting better. One of the co-owners just opened a bar/restaurant/arcade right across the street. It's called The Gift. We haven't been there yet, but I'm excited to check it out. Go see something at the Clinton Street Theater, for fuck's sake.
They're doing maintenance right now, though, too. There seems to be a lot of maintenance going on.
Son of a gun.
heat, I think. Heat related.
Check out Portland Art Museum's new theater on Division Street. It's called Tomorrow Theater. They're doing a lot of rad stuff. I know everyone is sad that the porn theater closed and it replaced it, but let's be honest, y'all weren't going to whack off at the Oregon Theater anyways. Mm-mm. Movie Madness, of course. We'd be there all the time. Become a member. Take a film class. Check out the Grand Illusion in Seattle. I don't know what's going on. I know they were supposed to move or something at some point. And then go help save the Arc Lodge cinemas from evictions. Arc Lodge is down in Columbia City in Seattle. I've never been there, so please help save it so I can check it out sometime.
I'll get some LA details too from Whitney, and then we can add that to our roster. Or anyone, you know, if you send us an Instagram message on Dirt Dog Cinema about...
It could be Ohio. It could be Michigan.
Yeah, it could be totally Ohio. Anywhere. Some of us have roots in Ohio now.
I don't have roots, but I have a Texas. Great...
Texas. I got some Texas. Tell me what... Yeah, like send them in and we'll talk about them because it's really important.
If you have something in your town that you want us to hype up, hit us up. We're on Dirt Dog Cinema on Instagram. You can email us at jimhuntpodcast@gmail.com. If you go to the dirtdogcinema.com website, there is a Gem Hunt page on there now. I haven't quite figured out how to link it to our domain name, but it's there. I'm too stupid. The whole site needs a redesign, but I'll figure it out. We be out there. All right. Baba Yaga. Bye.
Das Vedanya.
Dirt Dogs on a Gem Hunt.
Jesus.